everybody. It is me, George G. Got another great episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way, featuring Matt Benson. He's a certified financial planner and the owner of Sunmore Financial. He's been named to Investment News 40 Under 40. We had a great conversation about managing concentrated stock positions, what that means, some of the planning considerations when you have the opportunity to have them as part of your employment contract, the common pitfalls that people fall into, how to be proactive about creating a plan, and lots of other cool stuff, including a spirited game of two truths and a lie and a great difference-making tip. Let's go. Matt, to get us started, give us two truths and a lie.
So I went to school in Nebraska at the University of Nebraska, studied finance. I've had lunch with Warren Buffett on two different occasions. Not a large group, small group. One, two, I sold books door to door in college, paid my whole way through school, and most importantly, maxed out my Roth IRA each year while in college. And number three here, my wife and I have been to all 50 states.
Oh my goodness. There's a lot there. I feel like there were more than three things there. You went to college in Nebraska. You had lunch with Warren Buffett.
Sorry. The first one was the preface. And I've had lunch with Warren Buffett on two different occasions.
Okay.
That's the first one.
Number one.
And then the second, sold books door to door while I was in college, paid my whole way through school, maxed out my Roth IRA each year. Second. And then third, wife and I have been to all 50 states.
Oof, those are excellent. I've got some inside knowledge on you. I know that you sold books. I don't know about the IRA thing. I believe that it's very possible you had lunch with Warren Buffett. It's also very possible you've been to all 50 states. I don't think you've had lunch with Warren Buffett two times.
You got it. I've actually had lunch with Warren Buffett even once, but I have been to the Berkshire shareholder meeting.
Okay.
I ate a meal in the presence of Warren Buffett.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I got it. People that sold books with Southwest are very proud of their experience.
They are.
And are you, in fact?
That's the group. Yeah. Southwestern is the group I sold books with. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, for those who aren't familiar, give them 15 seconds or 30 seconds on that or whatever.
Yeah. Holy smokes. Yeah. I mean, it's probably the best if you want to be an entrepreneur or sales training, my goodness, it's the best training program, but it ain't, I mean, it's stinking work. I mean, I'll give like the really hard phrasing of it. I mean, we're working 80 hours a week straight commission, but so you find out you can separate the wheat from the chaff very, very quickly, very quickly.
And don't they drop you in some strange community and you live with some kind of a sponsor family?
Yeah. So we'd live in the same area, you know, all summer. So I grew up in Nebraska, but worked in like upstate New York and Pennsylvania, Massachusetts. We'd live in the same area all summer and live with the host family. And the host families I always lived with were fantastic. But yeah, then you work in that area all summer long. So it's a little different than just like the perception of being just dropped off in a neighborhood. Like if you have good PR, people get to know who you are in a good way. Where people are like, oh yeah, I heard about you, you know, talk about you at a baseball game. So it's, when I was at my best, it was super enjoyable, but there is for sure like the nerve of knocking on a door.
Yeah. Talk about just ultimate sales training. And you said it perfectly, separates the wheat from the chaff. So incredible experience. So you did that for 3 years?
I did it actually for 4 years,
four years.
Each year after I was, each year, freshman through my senior year.
That's awesome. All right. Very cool. Well, beautiful. Well, it's good to talk with you again. What is top of mind for you?
Yeah, the thing that's top of mind for me lately is the challenge that many investors have as it relates to a concentrated stock position. It's a common scenario that we see in today's market. Just, you know, employers trying to be competitive, you know, have different compensation arrangements where they'll offer RSUs, restricted stock units, employee stock purchase plan or ESPP, non-qualified stock options, incentive stock options. That's kind of the scope of, you know, we've written a white paper on it. It can be a potentially lucrative, you know, thing for people, but it also carries a substantial amount of risk. And so we've just been focusing and developing strategies that help mitigate some of those risks, but also identify or also align with the broader financial goals and risk tolerance for each client. So it's just about helping to find the sweet spot where diversification meets personal financial objectives.
And when I think about stock options, things like that, it strikes me that there is a lot of complexity.
Oh yeah. I mean, the non-qualified stock options and incentive stock options are probably a little less frequent to see, but there's a lot of complexity in those. You know, when to exercise? What's your tax consequence? Are you subject to the alternative minimum tax, AMT? If you are, you can, you know, on some of those there, you could end up owing a tax liability on something you don't even have money for yet, right? So they call that phantom tax. And that might be your best strategy, but just like anything as it relates to planning, you don't want that to be on accident, right? Oh, oops, when you get to April, I have a 5-6-figure tax liability because of what I did with my stock option, right? You just want, you know, you want to be proactive in those things and make sure that, you know, that's kind of a lot of what we've developed is developing a plan that, hey, if we know we're going to have a big liquidity event or a big tax, you know, a big tax peak in one certain year, what other things can we do to try and offset that so that we're not being ultra patriotic, if you will.
I appreciate that. You're right. I do not want to pay any more to Uncle Sam than I need to. No tipping from my perspective.
That's right.
So I think when people think about, equity in a company as an employee, if I'm not an owner, stock options. These are opportunities. And I think we think a lot about tech companies in Silicon Valley. Have these always been a common tool outside of Silicon Valley, and or are they becoming more popular all across the country?
No, I think you're right. I mean, the most common space where we'll see them is technology and biotech, but it's not those alone. I would say for sure different sectors, you see it more prominently, like I said, technology and biotech. And you'll see the incentive stock options and the non-qualified stock options. You know, a lot of times you'll see those before a company goes public or just like very early on in the company. Kind of like the name sounds, like an incentive stock option. You know, you're giving this, you know, a company's incentive in giving this is to give it to somebody who's influential in the company. When it's granted to you, there's no money. There's no money. There's nothing to be had for it unless the stock price goes up. So you're incentivized that the stock price goes up so that you have some skin in the game. Have some skin in the game as it relates to the company. For more mature companies, we're less likely to see, you know, the ISOs and the non-qualified stock options. But you know, companies that, you know, I'm in Arizona here. We, you know, Intel and Honeywell and Northrop Grumman and things like that. Like, we're far more likely to see RSUs or employee stock purchase plans. Those are very common, and those are, you know, a lot more mature companies.
So that was what I was curious about. Is, I know that I'm pretty sure there's lots of different ways to do this, from your startups that want to bring on great talent with the promise of a big exit or a big liquidity event. You can get rich working at this company, even though it doesn't seem like it right now, versus I'm going to work at a Fortune 100 company and I'm getting some kind of equity in the process. How much does it cost a company to do that? Why wouldn't a company do this kind of a thing?
Why wouldn't a company have stock options?
Like for some of these companies, small startups, they're publicly traded or they're private companies that are offering some kind of option. And so when they do eventually go public, that's when it happens. And then for a company like Honeywell, obviously it's a publicly traded company, so they're offering discounted opportunities to buy shares.
So I think what does it cost the company? I think the cost on the actual program is probably pretty negligible. When you're talking about like an employee stock purchase plan, they can discount the shares, and the incentive of why someone would be a part of that is because you can buy your company stock at up to a 15% discount. That seems kind of compelling, right? Now, there's a couple hold periods you have to satisfy, and even more if you want it to be a tax-favored distribution. But the discount, I think, from the company's perspective is like whatever. And on like the RSUs, like those are effectively, it's a bonus. It's taxed like a bonus that's tied to the company stock price, right? So you might say, hey, I get 100 shares of 100 RSUs that vest over 5 years. 20 a year over 5 years would be kind of a common vesting schedule. And company stock price goes up the day it vests. It looks the same as if you got a bonus on that day that it vests. And it's taxed the same way. So from the company's perspective, I think the real cost is losing talent, right? So if their competitors are offering programs like this and you're not, then you're going to lose talent, right? And again, I'm in Phoenix here, so there's a lot of aerospace. There's a lot of semiconductor and supporters of that with Intel and Taiwan Semiconductor. So if you're not offering that and your competitor is, then yeah, you're probably going to lose some of your top talent.
Which makes sense. It's pretty common sense, right? I have the opportunity. I have the degree, the experience. I'm a gifted engineer. If I can go to company A and get a piece of the action, so to speak, or company B and just get a salary, which is awesome, I'm probably going to go to company A where I have the potential upside.
No, that's absolutely it. Yeah, and I think there's like there in all of us there kind of there can exist this kind of greediness. It exists. It still exists for the bigger, more mature companies. But we're talking if we're as it relates to like startups. I mean, people hear the word startup and they think, oh man, Amazon was a startup at some point. Man, Apple was a startup at some point. Like, what if I work for this company and then the stock price goes, from $1 to $5,000 a share? I could become a millionaire just by this alone, right? And sure, that's possible. But you have to, when we're thinking about how you develop a plan around this, you have to take a step back and really think, what are your financial objectives? I know that sounds like totally canned and like financial planner jargon, but seriously, what, like having money just to have money does nothing, right? If you just have money in your bank account, have money in your bank account, that's not why you would go do this, right? Because you want to give generously. It's because you want to have a second home. It's because you want to buy a new car. It's because you want to send your kids to a private college, to private school. Like you have these objectives, right? How do all of these components of your compensation, or the components of your investment plan, how can those things solve this? And if you ask those questions, and that starts to get into how you develop a plan around this. Because I think kind of the first question you want to ask yourself is, how much exposure are you comfortable having to your company stock? And then from there, if you answer, I'm comfortable with, 5 to 15% or something like that. Well, if the number gets in excess of that, then you start to go, okay, this is awesome. This has been a great run. Maybe we should start to take some chips off the table. And then you can kind of get into strategy of, hey, how do we do this without getting absolutely blasted on taxes?
Because that is a very, very realistic thing of getting blasted on taxes. If you do not have a plan and all of a sudden you get this tax bill that is due, that's not a happy place to be. And Enron taught us that it's not good to have our career and the majority of our investments or our retirement plan tied up with the same company. And it's awesome to be rich, but what's the point of it if we haven't really thought it all the way through of what am I going to do with all this money, and what's the point of all of it? So does somebody need to become an expert? Probably not, right? That's why there's folks like you who are out there talking about it. So what does a typical engagement look like?
Yeah.
How do you help people plan?
Yeah. So I think, it depends on the complexity of what someone's looking at. You know, you don't, like you often say, no one's going to care more about your money than you are. Right. And that, you know, that's true. Like I say that kind of stuff to my clients too. Right. So, when you're engaging, you know, if you decide to engage with a financial planner or someone else just to give you counsel, bear in mind that whoever you're engaging is not going to care more than you care about your situation, right? So you need to still be educated on the matter. Like when we have a client engagement, we're not asking for someone to toss us the keys and say, Matt, just tell me what to do, right? We're trying to walk through them and say, hey, so you've got like actual real example here. I have a client who's a significant portion of their annual compensation, about almost half, is from RSUs. And there's the company he works for, stock price has gone up, has done well. So he's had these RSUs that were granted over the last several years. Stock price has gone up. His compensation as a result has gone up as well. And he's going to have, when we look over the next 3 years here, and this is 23, 24, and 25, and we're able to project out, we see, hey, 24, we're going to have an abnormal amount of RSUs vesting in that year. And if the stock price of the company stays just where it is today, we're going to end up in a different tax bracket than what we are, right? Mm-hmm. This, you know, again, coming back to planning topics here, this person is charitably inclined and, you know, gives generously to his church. And he, you know, is looking and saying, if I look at 23, 24, and 25, 2023, 24, and 25, is there one year that's better than the other as far as gifting? And the answer is, yeah, there is. So for him, it's hey, we can give more. If we give more in 24, we're able to get a tax deduction at 35%. Whereas if in 2025 or in 2023, we're looking at getting a tax deduction at 32%, right? This is kindergarten level math when we look at it that way. Which would you rather have, a deduction at 35% or a deduction at 32%, right? And we're able to come to that end conclusion there by knowing what our objectives are, like what are we actually trying to do with this money? And then by making a plan out and seeing, hey, when are these things going to hit?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Not rocket science, but rocket science at the same time. So
totally, it is. There's a lot of moving parts to it. And I think most people aren't, they're not intuitively going to think through it, necessarily through that way. I think a lot of people, as it relates to their equity compensation, they kind of look and they go, well, it is what it is. Like, it's just going to hit. Mm. Well, yes. and there are a lot of components to your plan that are outside of your control. So like in this example here, when these RSUs vest, are these within our control? No, they're not. No, that's kind of dictated to us by the company. But what can we do as a result of knowing that those RSUs are going to vest, right? And yeah, we can do something about that. We can do something about that that has a positive impact for that household, for that family.
Love it. Well, Matt, we're ready for your difference making tip. What do you have for us?
Well, I think a good tip to leave for the audience, again, kind of boring here, but regularly review and rebalance your investment portfolio. I know it seems cliche, but it's especially true if you have concentrated stock positions. Markets change and so do personal circumstances. So it's just important to ensure that your investment strategy continues to align with your financial goals and your risk tolerance.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets a come on. Sometimes the most important stuff is the most basic stuff and the stuff that's easiest to just not do. Kind of like sitting down and doing strategic planning for our businesses or our lives, Matt.
Absolutely.
Well, it's great talking with you again. And I believe that you have a workshop or some kind of a seminar coming up on concentrated stock positions.
That's right. Yeah. In 2024 here, we're going to do three different webinars here. So if you want to learn more about that, you can go to sunmorefinancial.com/aligned. So that's SONMORE, financial.com/aligned. You can register for our upcoming webinar or watch a recorded webinar. And then in addition, when you register for the webinar, you'll get access to our white paper, which delves into great detail on concentrated stock positions.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Matt your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to Sunmore, S-O-N-M-O-R-E, financial.com/aligned and get registered for one of those upcoming webinars. Take advantage of that white paper, because I just bet if you've got some kind of stock option, bonus, something or other that is part of your employee compensation package, the information is sitting in a pile on your desk or the kitchen counter, and you've been knowing and thinking about doing something about it. So this is your opportunity to actually take action. Thanks again, Matt.
Thanks, George.
And finally, as Matt mentioned a minute ago, friendly reminder, there's not going to be anybody who's more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.